Okay, we're going to go ahead and get started. As a reminder, Experiment 3 is this week. I think everybody has signed up. First batch of you all will be doing that today. Done what I can to make that not so onerous in this last week. As long as you have your transfer function derived and you've looked at a Bode plot of it before you go in there and pay attention to some of the things the lab write-up says about how to adjust the scope, you should be able to kind of go through, find all the points. Not be too bad. SAIS or something else that they're calling it now for end of course evaluations should be open. I think everybody should have received an email about that. I'll mention it here. Please do fill those out as incentive. I'll give 5% extra credit on everybody's final grade if everybody fills it out. We have 100% completion rate before the final. Across both sections. So I do this, I value your feedback. We've made some changes to the course this semester in terms of some of the structure and labs. So please do fill it out. They're anonymous, so I don't know. Ask that you consider giving me in the kind of comment section, which we still have, any feedback you might have generally, but also I'd be interested to hear what people thought of the labs. And what people thought of the recorded lectures. Maybe if you don't mind not being anonymous, I'll ask now. Anybody, do you find the recorded lectures useful? People are using those? Okay. I'll keep doing that then. Okay, questions on that?
So for the final exam, when are we going to get that? When is that? What's the timeline of the final?
You're going to get it Monday, and you'll have week? I don't know. Yeah. At least. Let me check on the final schedule, but you'll at worst get it Monday, turn it in Friday at normal class time. Okay, you can turn it in then. Yeah, slide it under the door. If I'm not around, you can email it to me if you scan it. Any option, as long as you get it to me before then 8 a.m. on a week from Monday. Okay. We'll review that this coming Monday as we hand it out. Other questions?
So on the extra credit, so it'll just say how many people have done it.
No, I can go in and see response rate. Right now, one person has done it. It's got a long ways to go. But please do fill it out. Value feedback. We're constantly changing these courses based on what the students say about them. So I'd like to hear what everybody thinks. Okay. Anything else? Not. So we've been talking about magnetics design. Last time we did a gap inductor using magnetic circuit analysis. The class before we had done it through direct application of Fourier and Ampere's law. We looked at the effect of that air gap. Found is that air gap increases the core reluctance. It allows us to potentially get to a higher current without saturating. It removes a lot of the dependence of the inductance on the core permeability, which lets us get away from the specifics of the core material, which may have some non-linearities, may be variable, be more dependent on mu naught, the permeability free space, which is a constant. It also allowed us to decouple inductance and saturation currents and gave us the potential to be able to design the two somewhat independently, though coupled. And then we went through and did a transformer example, solved both the ideal equations, if we assume the permeability of the core is infinite, and the non-ideal equations, where we assume there is some finite permeability. What that gives us is magnetizing inductance of the transformer. I think what I'm going to do today on the notes, I go on to talk about the H curves. I'm going to skip a few things, hop ahead, make sure that I cover the material that you need for the last part of the last problem of the homework, and then loop back to this point either today or Friday for kind of more complex loss analysis. I'm going to hop ahead and begin talking about losses and design methods of magnetic devices. So in general, I can split the energy loss in any magnetic device into two categories. Copper loss, which is losses that show up in the winding. And core loss, which shows up in the core. Okay. And then further, within each of these categories, there are a number of different loss mechanisms. DC copper loss is just going to be due to the base DC resistance of the winding and pushing current through it. And then we have some higher frequency AC copper losses due to things like skin effect, proximity effect, fringing flux of the core, which have to do with either increased losses or increased resistance at higher frequency. These are specific to high frequency components that go through this inductor. And they'll be negligible if there is negligible high frequency going through this inductor. And I'm dancing around the wording of that a little bit because it's not just what is your switching frequency. I can have a very high switching frequency, but a relatively large inductance is going to do a good job filtering, and then the current is going to be very heavily small ripple, and it's not going to have much high frequency component. It's going to be almost DC current. It depends on kind of the frequencies involved and how much ripple at those frequencies. Okay. So for today, we're going to focus on just this one, assuming that we have very small ripple, and then we'll get into the higher frequency losses. Okay. And then core loss, by and large, is frequency dependent. There are these residual loss mechanisms which modify some of the high frequency effects based on DC bias. We're not going to talk about those at all. I mean, eddy current, hysteresis losses, we'll talk about. But everything in this blue box is part of this stuff I say we're going to loop back to. So I'm going to cover DC copper loss and then how to design an inductor based on DC copper loss. Then we'll loop back, look at some more kind of complex loss mechanisms. So, skipping a couple things. DC copper loss is relatively simple. The DC resistance of whether it's an inductor winding or any wire, resistance at DC, we expressed as rho, which is the resistivity of copper, based in ohms times centimeters. This LB is the length of the wire, and AW is the cross-sectional area of the wire. So it's rho times length over area. Okay. This general formula for DC resistance of any wire, and then I can calculate the power loss associated with that as IRMS squared times R. Sufficiently small ripple, I may be able to use I average squared times R. But in terms of being mathematically correct, it should always be the RMS. So what does this look like in some physical inductor? Well, I stick with kind of the geometry we've been looking at. I have a core that looks like this, and then windings that go. One winding would kind of do this around that core, wrapping around one side of it, doing a bunch of windings. That coil is going to produce flux that then goes around the core. So I have some constraints associated with what I can do with this winding, and they're related to how many windings I can actually fit in here. So at maximum, I could, in my drawing here, get these 9 windings. After that, I've run out of room to pack more windings into this thing. Okay. So we define for any core, it's known as the window area. Which is the total area available for winding to go through. Define it, this middle window over here on the outside, I could go out as far as I want. I'm outside of the core, but it's inside the enclosed magnetic path. How many windings can I fit? Okay. And generally, what do I want to do? Well, I've got this constrained area, and I could choose to only use part of it. If I only need three windings, three turns, then I could just use a third of that area. But when we get into design, it's going to indicate that I could have a lower resistance design. Because if I use three of these windings, well, I could have made the wire much bigger and used more of that area, get the exact same inductance, because all I'm changing is the area of the wire, same number of turns, same core. But by increasing the area of the wire, my resistance will go down. So generally, you want to use close to all of that window area. And you're either putting more turns to get higher inductance or otherwise, or you're making the actual wire thicker with the same number of turns, but getting close to using that whole area. Now, you can't use that whole area because it's a square window and you've got round conductors. You can change that and instead use foil or square wire, but still, you're never going to be able to have full utilization of that window. So we define something known as the fill factor, called KU. KU is a number between 0 and 1. And it is the ratio of the total copper area used in there, N times the area of the wire, divided by the window area. Okay. For this case, circular windings in a square window, if I pack that exactly perfectly, everything's aligned, and I have my window area is exactly 3 wire diameters tall and wide, then I get something where KU is the ratio of kind of the square to the inscribed circle. Here it would be KU is equal to the area of the copper, pi r squared, or the area of the circle, 2r squared, or 4, quantity 2r squared, 4r squared. This is pi over 4, is equal to 0.78. This number would be kind of a theoretical limit for if I'm using round wires inside a square window area, how good can my fill factor be? In order to achieve that, I need my wires to be exactly some integer number fit within the window area height and width, and I would need to wind exactly perfectly. As I'm winding this thing, nothing could be any sub, you know, little bit of micrometer off, no kinks in the wire. So we never really get close to this more realistically. KU, I think I have a slide later given some values, kind of 0.2 to 0.5 range. What the fill factor is, higher if I'm using square wires or rectangular wires, lower if I'm using round wires or things with a lot of insulation around them. Insulation will also take away from how much this is filled with copper. So, looking at those two things, what that is going to give me is a constraint on the size of the wire that I can fit into a given core. So what I'll have is the window area times KU, which is this fill factor ratio. That's going to be the total area available for copper. And that has to be greater than the total copper I try to put in there, which is N times the area of the wire. Let's say area of the wire less than or equal to this divided by N. And then the length of this wire, I'm going to define that. LB in this equation is N times MLT, where MLT is equal to the mean length per turn. This is a value that most data sheets for magnetic cores will give you. And it just says, okay, if I look at what I've sketched here, this inner column of windings would have a little bit shorter length than the middle column, which would have a little bit shorter length than the outer column. So they just take this and assume you completely fill up the window with whatever wires, integrate over it to get an average, and then report, hey, if you fill up the window, here's going to be the average length of each turn. Then the total length of that coil should be the number of turns times that average length, if I've completely filled it up. Okay, and again, the assumption is that I want to fill it up. If I have unfilled area, well, I should just make my windings a little bigger to take up more of that window area, get my resistance down a little bit. Okay, so this is now going to lead to a method for designing inductors where we're going to pull together, well, inductance, saturation limits, resistance, and these physical constraints to be able to directly solve, okay, with this sort of model of an inductor, what is the best way to implement this thing? Okay. So, and again, hop a bit down to, this is going to be the basis of chapter 14, is developing this, what's known as the KG method, which is just going to use the things that we've covered so far. Let me get my equations. So we said we're designing an inductor for a power converter. There's a number of things that we want to achieve with that. And I'm going to group them into four goals. When I'm designing this, I want to get some desired inductance. I have to make sure that whatever my design comes up with, it gives me the inductance that I need, L, which is dictated by my converter analysis. What do I need to meet my ripple spec, et cetera? Okay. Two, I need to make sure that I prevent saturation. Core, i.e. make sure that my saturation current is greater than I max would be whatever the maximum current I expect this inductor to ever conduct is. Okay. Three, physically, I'm going to need to make sure that I can fit all the windings in the core. Which is going to be based on the equations we just wrote. That's a physical constraint. I can solve for this thing where I say I need huge wires and I need 100 turns mathematically. Tell me, hey, that'd be a lot of inductance and really small resistance. But practically, I wouldn't be able to build the thing because I've got more copper area than window area. And then finally, subject to these three, we want to minimize power loss. In this case, we're going to consider only DC copper loss. And the slides that I skipped over are going to talk about more complex loss mechanisms. This method is going to only consider this one, assuming it is far and away the dominant loss mechanism. That'll be true as long as there's very small ripple in the inductor. If we start to allow larger ripples, some of these AC mechanisms may dominate. Okay, so this is what we want out of it. What are the things we have to achieve this goal? So we've got a number of design parameters. So we have these physical characteristics of the core, AC, WA, so the area of the core, the winding area, magnetic path length, mean length per turn. Those are all characteristics of the geometry of the core. So we could kind of lump these all together into core selection. Let's see. Additionally, VSAT will be a characteristic of the core material. And let's separate those out, in fact. Let's do core size selection, core material. Give us VSAT, permeability of the core, though if we're gapping it, that's going to be less important for this design method. Generally, core size, core geometries are standardized. Say I want an EE2313. That's a specific geometry of the core, and different manufacturers will construct it with different materials. So I can select these two independently when I'm buying the core. And say, here's the shape I want. I want it in this material. Okay. We get to choose also the number of turns, the length of the air gap, and how we implement those turns, AW, the wire area. So conceptually, this seems possible. I want to kind of do four things, and I've got four things to choose, maybe five if I decouple material and core. So it seems like this could be done. The approach for what's known as the KG design method is to solve N, LG, and the area of the wire based on these constraints, based on these design goals, for a single core. And the reason there is these things can be approximated as continuous values and I can work with them mathematically. Selecting a core, I can't say, well, let me choose any area of the core because there are only certain valid cores. It's a bit harder to do any optimization over this space than it is over these things. And I can approximate as continuous, and if I get 3.5 windings, I'll round to four windings. So it's going to be just for one core, and the method's going to basically tell me, for the core you picked, can you achieve everything you want? Can you get the inductance, the saturation current, windings all fit in there, and achieve some desired resistance of that winding that will limit your power loss? Okay. And if yes, step through, and here's what all these things are. Okay. So to derive this approach, derive this KG method, what we're going to do is just write equations for what sort of things do I need to meet these four design goals, and then slam them all together to get one overall equation that tells me if it's possible. Okay. So I've got four things I want: desired inductance, prevent saturation, hit the windings, and minimize power loss. And we'll go through those using these same numbers, 1, 2, 3, and 4, and write the equations for them. Okay. So one, desired inductance. That would come from perhaps specifications on delta IL in my design. And I drive, okay, I need L to be 10 microhenry. And then based on our analysis from last class, with an air gap, the inductance of some arbitrary physical implementation, mu naught N squared AC over LG. And this was the simplification. For the reluctance of the gap is much greater than the reluctance of the core. We did last class. Because of where I skipped over stuff, that's like 30 slides back, so I'm not going to go back and show it, but it's in last class notes. And then similarly, prevent saturation. Comes from matching LDIDT to Faraday's law on DBDT. What we end up with in the past is that my Imax is equal to LG over N mu naught times Bmax. This is how my current relates to my flux density in a inductor, single winding inductor. Bmax is something I'm going to specify. And I'm going to set it less than the saturation flux density by maybe greater than 10%. But Bmax, so Bsat is where it actually saturates. Bmax is my choice of the maximum flux density that I'm going to allow. Definitely should be less than the saturation, and I'll leave myself a little bit of a safety margin in there. Count for error and variations. 10%, maybe a bit aggressive. Maybe 25, 50% would be a little bit safer. So Imax, I'll know from my circuit operation what's the peak current at my maximum power. Bmax, I'll choose some safety margin. L, I'll know. So already you start to see by coupling these things together, I'll be able to get somewhere. So if I choose an Imax and a Bmax, I've got L, G, and N. I can't solve this independently. If I choose an inductance and a core, I've got N squared and an LG, so I can't directly solve either of those. If I start coupling these together, I now have two equations, two unknowns. Okay. Before we get to that, we're going to do the other two constraints. Third constraint was windings need to fit. This comes from some of the definitions that we just made. What we had on the previous slide was that area of the winding is less than or equal to winding area times Ku over N. Maybe a better drawing than my previous one. This is core. Got all these windings that are going around the core in this way. I need N of these individual areas to fit within the total window area, which is this entire thing. As long as that's true, all of my windings will fit. And then my last constraint is want to minimize inductance or resistance. So my power loss, call P C U D C, C U for copper, D C for it's only considering the D C resistance, is I L R M S squared times R D C. R D C is what? Rho times the length is NMLT for the area. Area of the wire, say, is AW. I have it up here with my constraint on it. So I'm going to take these two equations, and I'm going to slam them all together. What's going to give me is what's known as the KG method. Equations are L is mu naught N squared AC over LG to I max is B max times LG over mu naught N. Yes. 3 area of the wire less than or equal to KU WA over N. 4 R is equal to rho N MLT over AW. So there's multiple ways to do this. I'm going to go through one. So I'm going to combine one and two while eliminating. LG. To do that, I'll take two. I max is equal to B max times one over mu naught N times LG, then LG, I'll solve one, multiplying LG over and dividing the inductance. It'll give me mu naught N squared AC over L. I've eliminated LG by combining these two. I can simplify a bit. Mu naught and one of the N's will cancel. This is equal to B max N AC over L. In parallel, I'm going to take 3 and 4, and I'm going to eliminate area of the wire one by one, kind of eliminating all of the things I need to choose to get down to a single design constraint. Combine 3 and 4, what we'll have is R is equal to rho N MLT divided by AW divided by KU WA over N. It'll be squared. And then because this one's an inequality, what that's going to tell me when in the denominator is that my resistance is going to be greater than or equal to that. And give you as high of a resistance as you want, no problem. Getting the low resistance that requires some effort. Okay, and then lastly, I'm going to slam these two things together and eliminate N. So the way that I'm going to do that is I'm going to solve this equation for N squared. And then so that I don't have to have a huge radical over everything, I'm just going to square this equation. Say I max squared is B max squared, N squared, AC squared over L squared. and then plug in the solution for n squared back to it. So now combine these. What we'll get is Imax squared is equal to Bmax squared AC squared over L squared times n squared, which I solve from here. It's going to be RKUWA over rho MLT. Anything that cancels? No. Let's rewrite this. AC squared R KU WA over L squared rho MLT. And since I push this inequality into there on this side, replacing for n squared, which is less than that, I'm going to end up with Imax squared is less than or equal to this. Inequality is going to become non-important in a moment because we're going to push to the end of it. But then the last thing I'm going to do, so what is this now? This is a single equation, Imax squared less than this stuff, which combined all four of my constraints. And in the process, I eliminated number of turns, air gap, and wire area. Back here, the things that I get to choose are the core, number of turns, air gap, and wire area. So I cram these all together, eliminating these three of my design parameters. So the only one left is the core that I choose. So this equation, the only open choice that isn't constrained by my circuit operation, what I need for L, what I need for Imax, is the selection of the core. Then this inequality is going to tell me, can this core do it? Can it do all this stuff, all four of these things at once? Give you the inductance, the saturation current, the resistance, and be physically realizable. Okay. The last step I'm going to make is I'm going to just rearrange this equation without changing it to push all of the core stuff, the core geometry, to one side, and then all of the rest of the stuff to the other side. Okay. So here on the left, I'll keep Imax squared and then bring over my Bmax squared. See R. KU, this, push in the numerator, my L squared rho, then what I'll be left with here will be WA AC squared over MLT. And this thing on the right, we define as KG. No specific significance to the K and the G, the name of this method. But this is essentially some figure of merit for the core. And it's somewhat arbitrary. The units would be centimeters squared, and centimeters squared squared over centimeters would be centimeters to the fifth, or millimeters to the fifth, any unit of length to the fifth. So it's not really anything that you could see physically, but it has to do with the physical geometry of this core. Then this stuff over here is entirely to do with my circuit operation, a little bit on my selections and my design goals, R and Bmax, what I want the circuit to have, Imax, what's going to happen when I run this converter, L, my desired inductance, and then rho and KU constraints. Okay. If I can satisfy this inequality, so this thing I could plug in for any given core, look up what is WAAC and MLT, plug in, get a number. This I should know as I'm trying to design my inductor. Here's what it needs to do in the circuit. I want to get this R. I plug in and I get two numbers. If this one is less than this one, then that core can do it. And in order to get it to do it, all I have to do is now back out through these four equations. Because this is saying I can satisfy all four, so then I can go back one by one through all the steps of this derivation and solve what is N squared, what is LG, what is the area of the wire. Okay. So inequality, give me a good color, tells you, can this core do it? Not explicitly in there. So one thing that perhaps is a little strange is this R. As I said, we want to minimize resistance, but this method says you have to specify, I want this resistance. Well, you can do that and decide, okay, I'm willing to accept 1 watt of power loss and I've got 1 amp going through it, so I need it to be less than 1 ohm. Or you can take this and just change R, figure out, okay, what is the minimum R where this inequality is still satisfied, right? If I go up very high resistance, this thing will get smaller, it's gonna be easier to do it. It's much easier to satisfy all my constraints if my resistance can be very large. Start dropping R, in the denominator, this term is gonna get bigger and it's gonna be harder to satisfy this inequality. You can find what is that minimum R that I can achieve while still satisfying my other constraints. Okay. This one I talked about a little earlier, the window utilization or fill factor KU. Maybe 0.7 maximum, but more realistically, kind of 0.5 for normal inductors, smaller for high voltage things where I'm gonna have to have a lot of insulation around each winding, taking up area, and still can't approach that 0.78, even if I have foil inductors that are perfectly rectangular and very thin, still have some insulation and some non-idealities due to them warping a bit. Okay. So then this just repeats. This KG factor we just derived includes all four of our design constraints that went into this. And what I'm getting to is here. So this is just a chart of the complete method. So designed by this KG method is select a core, evaluate KG for it, evaluate, then check if that KG is greater than this thing that we derived. Here, this is from the book in chapter 14. There are these scale factors, which have to do with the assumed units. We went through and did the derivation. I didn't care if something was in centimeters or meters, but to match all the units up with mu not being in whatever its units are, but meters base, some of these being given in centimeters, other things in millimeters, it tells you exactly what the units for everything need to be, and you can convert that. The data sheet gives you winding area in centimeters squared, and it wants millimeters squared, convert it over. So as long as you follow the units, you won't end up with any errors there. You evaluate this inequality that we just had. If the inequality is satisfied, that means the core can do it. And then sequentially, this is how you step back out of that derivation one by one. you solve air gap, number of turns, area of the wire. Those three things will then tell you the physical implementation. You can then test, make sure it worked, what your resistance is, that it's less than whatever your design goal was. But if you've made no errors, you shouldn't need to. It's guaranteed what's mathematically built into there. Okay. If the inequality is not satisfied, means your core cannot do it and you need to pick a different core. Generally speaking, that's going to mean you need a bigger core. Okay. Again, this centimeters to the fifth is not an exact, I can't draw you a diagram of what that centimeters to the fifth parameter is, but by and large, for comparable geometries, it's going to mean it needs to get bigger, so you have bigger area of the core and can accommodate a larger number of windings through a bigger window area to ease this constraint. So it is very easy here to mess up on units. So the equations are all laid out, but if something goes in there as centimeters and something goes in there as millimeters, you're going to be off by some orders of magnitude. And then as you go through, these things are going to get way off. You get weird numbers of turns, weird areas of winding. Okay. So make sure to match up the units requested. I haven't listed them here, but there's a table in chapter 14 that shows, okay, Bmax is assumed to be in Tesla, AC is assumed to be in centimeters squared. There's also in Appendix D a few useful tables. One would be, I gave one example here. This is for a certain type of core, EE core. And you're going to take two of these EEs and put them together and then wrap the windings through both of these windows. They give, for many different geometries, these sorts of tables where it has kg pre-calculated in centimeters to the fifth for each of these cores. So you can go through and say, hey, here's the other side of this equation, calculate this for my circuit, and then just go down the table until one of them has a kg greater than that value. That's the smallest core I can use to have this work. And it also has all of these individual geometrical parameters that we've been talking about, cross-sectional area, winding area, mean length of turns, magnetic path length, core weight, if you're interested. Okay. Then Appendix D. The other useful thing is it has AWG table, American Wire Gauge, AWG, that gives standard sizes for wire. Quad knot up to AWG 29, and it tells you the wire area, resistance in ohms per centimeter, and the diameter of it. This method will solve for some continuous AW. It'll tell you if I multiply these two things and divide by n, I'll get some number that's not going to be exactly a wire gauge that I can buy, which is why we kept this inequality. You're going to have to say, okay, my wire area is actually going to have to be a little bit less than what this method would predict so that everything will still fit. If I go more, bigger area in my discretization, that would be lower resistance, but it may not fit and I may not be able to build the thing. It's more important that I can build it. So we choose the largest area, which would be the smallest gauge, based on how it is. Small gauges are thick wires. Choose the smallest gauge that will satisfy that inequality. That may be another reason to go and check the resistance afterwards. It may be that mathematically this all worked, but when I round down the area of the wire, my resistance is a little bit greater now than what I need. I may have to reconsider. Okay. I pick AW, I pick based on AWG table for a wire that I can buy. And then down here, when I evaluate the resistance, I'll use the actual area, not the constraint, what it is with the real wire. Say, what is the real resistance going to be? Okay. Questions? And way back. So what that did is gave us the base inductance we want, and considering this individual loss mechanism, how can we get more or less the minimum DC copper loss for a given core? And then we can iterate through cores. More broadly, there are a lot of other loss mechanisms that may be important that just aren't considered in that KG design method. Like I said, if it's a filter inductor with very small ripple, then these should all be small because they only have to do with the high frequency components, the currents and voltages applied. But if we want to design something that isn't small ripple, we do that often in advanced converters, we have to consider all of these things. There's going to be another design method that we'll talk about called KGFE that includes DC copper loss and core loss, but I'm going to sacrifice something. So in the KG method, I have my length of the air gap and my number of turns, my core selection. I wanted to get these four things. If I add something else I want to get, core loss, I'm going to have to give something up. Otherwise, I've got too many equations, not enough unknowns. So I'm going to give up saturation in the KGFE method, and I'm not going to explicitly design it so that it doesn't saturate. I'll have to go back and check afterwards, did it saturate in this design? Really, we did the same thing in the KG method by neglecting these other losses. So I made sure it doesn't saturate, but could be that core loss is 100 watts in that design. So we didn't include it. So if I think that could be significant, I'd have to go back and check that afterwards. But we're limited with the design parameters that we have on things that we can explicitly design in. So I have another one that includes core loss. None of the design methods we'll present include AC copper loss, because particularly things about fringing flux, proximity effects, they're very complicated. So we're going to talk about the mechanisms. But if these are significant and we're trying to do a very good design, it often comes to running finite element analysis on a computer to figure out what all the winding currents are and what the losses in them are. You'll see even core loss is a bit hand wavy in how we calculate that. Usually works. Okay. So we'll pick up there on Friday. Okay.